the world again. Everybody's certain of it one more time.
The song that I used to lead off my third millennial, We Really Mean It This Time, Honest, 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 End of the World edition of the Saturday Cafe. David Wilcox, welcome to the Saturday Cafe.
Thanks. Good to be here.
I don't think I'm going to do a fourth millennial. I've got apocalypse fatigue.
Yeah, that happens.
Actually, it's sort of like election fatigue, only with bigger stakes.
Yeah.
What are you doing for the end of the world?
There's this concert the day after the end of the world at the in Asheville where I live, December 22nd. So my son did the graphics on the T-shirt. It says the end of the world tour, one date only, advance tickets, no refunds.
I was going to ask about advance tickets. Makes perfect sense. A closer end of the world in some people's books is coming this Tuesday, and it seems like a lot of the songs from your most recent album, Reverie, kind of talk politics more than I'm used to from you.
I have some songs on there which are character songs, interesting characters that I love talking to. And so I'm sometimes singing with the sort of literary device of the untrustworthy narrator. Mm-hmm. And There's a song on there called Shark Man about the people who are angry for a living, the people who are just stirring up the fight for the sake of entertainment. Mm-hmm. And it's a song that just sort of came one afternoon, and I thought, yeah, somebody's got to sort of blow the whistle on these people who are just sort of making us fight with each other for their profit.
It's interesting to try and get into the mind of someone you normally wouldn't actually want to talk to.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a temptation to put things in that don't feel real or trustworthy just to be mean, or are you a better person than I am in that regard?
The songs hold me accountable to a higher good, and I love that I sing them every night because they keep bringing me back to my aspirations to, play fair and speak the truth and all that.
Well, could you play fair something live for us here today?
I'd love to. This is a song that kept me from worrying. I was worried about my son, and there's no reason to worry about Nate. He's doing fine. But sometimes I bother him with questions like, so Nate, what are you going to major in? What are you going to work at? What are you going to base your life on? And he's looking at me like, Dad, the thing I'm going to work at maybe hasn't even been invented, which of course is true. So this is a song about a trust. Kind of like trusting that he'll see those waves of change coming and get himself in a position where those waves are rideable, sort of like surfing. Because those are the kind of waves that you travel thousands of miles to get to. If the surface of the ocean is this time that we're alive, then this rising wave in motion is this moment that we ride. If you don't move when it's moving, then your life leaves you behind. If you can't see what it's doing, trust the wave more than your mind. When this wave is all around me, I got no other plans. Keep my balance through the changes and let the wave say who I am. Let the wave say, from a thousand miles of water, from the wind beyond belief, every wave roars out its power as it rises on the reef. And that high blue wall could break you. You could never fight the sea. You just learn to let it take you to that place you wanna be. When this wave is all around me, I got no other plan. Keep my balance through the changes and let the wave say who I am. The ride of my lifetime. When this wave is all around me, I got no other plan. Keep my balance through the changes and let the wave say who I am. Let the wave say.
My guest today on the Saturday Cafe is David Wilcox. Let the waves say. What are the waves in your life that are telling you what you're doing?
The inspiration that I get from songs often is sort of the oracle between my heart and my mind. It's the place that I find out the things that I don't want to miss in my life. And the song will wake me up to them before it's too late. And So I love how the whole purpose of writing a song is not just to sort of document what I think or, you know, what I'm feeling, but sort of hold this clear emotional vision of sort of what I'm growing toward and remind me that that's possible, that I could see the world in a different way. And that has been the best part of songwriting.
What's the worst part of songwriting?
Well, the worst part, of course, is that the thing that I'm trying to do is capture these epiphanies like catching wind in a box, and it is actually impossible. It's sort of like when you wake up from a dream, one of those perfect, beautiful dreams, and you think, oh God, if I could only remember this, the rest of my life would be bliss. And so you switch on the light and you search for the paper and you find the pen and it doesn't write and you find another pen, and then what's left of the dream is some random images that don't make sense anymore. And you realize, no, it's gone. And you won't ever be able to catch it. And that's the way it is with every single song. Halfway through every single song, I think, oh, this is actually it. This, I've got it. I've my life is different from here on. I have made the jump to light speed. I'm going to be happy. And then you realize, no, it's just a song. It's kind of, it's nice, but it's not that. It's not what you thought it was. So that's the worst part of songwriting. But in a way, the fact that it's impossible is sort of like job security. So
because you have to keep chasing the wind with that airtight box.
Yeah, you have to keep going for it.
We've talked a little bit about what songs mean and do for you. What do they do for your audience? What does your audience tell you about your songs?
Well, there are songs that find people at the right moment, and they seem to be a catalyst for facing what they know to be true and kind of living into it. And there are lives that change. And what I love to think about that is that obviously it's not sort of, you know, something that I'm responsible for. It's more like, you know, a song is sort of, you write this letter, you put it in the bottle, you put the cork in, you toss it in the ocean, and then it washes up on somebody's shore and they read it at the right moment, and it seems like it's coming from something much further away than just some guy with his own ideas and his little guitar. It seems to be coming from that choreography of the coincidence. It seems to be coming from that mystical, wonderful coincidence. And so I love that the songs that have found me in that manner, you know, like driving through the night with the station almost out of range, and here comes this song that's closer than my own jugular vein. It's a song that somehow knows me better than I know myself, and I love that. And so that's why I've always written songs that are not one size fits all. They're they're specific. They're written for one person. And when someone else finds it and it's also, you know, the perfect fit for them, the closeness of it is such a satisfying thing. So I've always loved that when I send these thoughts out on a record, I just trust that they will find their home. And as a matter of fact, the very first record I ever made, there was that weird limbo when the work is done, but the record's not out yet. And I was up one night feeling like it was time for these songs to move into the world. And I opened up my window. I was living in this big Victorian communal house, and on the top floor, and right outside the window, there's a big tree. And I just imagined that the songs were like a whole bunch of birds just spending the night, you know, sort of in that tree. And I was just kind of silently shooing them out into the world, like, songs, go find your people. You've hung around me long enough. I've heard you. Go find people who haven't heard you. Fly, fly. And it was such a wonderful sort of rite of passage and a great ritual of these songs are not mine anymore. Go out into the world and find your people.
I'm trying to imagine a song feeder outside the window.
See, now that's the kind of thing. Wow. Yeah. This is exactly the thing. If there were sort of like a target market for songwriters and the magazine, the catalog came in the mail. Oh, get your song feeder. It's like a dream catcher, but it's just for songs.
And all you have to put in it is your brightest joys and your deepest sorrows. And, you know, you just got to open a vein, fill it up, and then wait for the songs to come.
Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful having you in the studio live with me today. This is just great.
My pleasure.
David Wilcox will be performing tonight at the Wall Hall with Cassandra Robertson, starting at 8 o'clock, the Wall Hall, 8th and Lincoln Streets in Eugene. It would be lovely to have another song, if you'd be so kind.
Love to. I think I'll try this one. Now, this is a song also about how songs hold us accountable. But I've disguised it as a more graphic promise. She had a life to live. The day she left home, she vowed no surrender, no company drone. She wrote it down in crimson, she wrote it down in black, she wrote it down so deep, she's never gonna take it back. Make your clear and solemn vow before the age of compromise. Write it here and write it now, always right before your eyes. This tattoo, this tattoo, this tattoo. It isn't on the surface, it doesn't need to be. She wrote it down so deep, only she can see. She doesn't have to show it, it isn't made for show. She made the print so plain, it's written on her soul. Make your clear and solemn vow before the age of compromise. Write it here and write it now, always right before your eyes. This tattoo, with this tattoo you make your promise of who you are and what you think. This will be your binding contract written down in blood and ink. She had a life to live the day she left home. And songs are like tattoos. You know I've been to sea before.
crown and anchor me, or let me sail away. She had a life to live. The day she left home, she vowed no surrender, no company drone.